Three nights later, old Major died peacefully in his sleep. His body was buried at the foot of the orchard. This was early in March. During the next 3 months, there was much secret activity. Major's speech had given to the more intelligent animals on the farm a completely new outlook on life. They did not know when the rebellion predicted by Major would take place. They had no reason for thinking that it would be within their own lifetime, but they saw clearly that it was their duty to prepare for it. The work of teaching and organizing the others fell naturally upon the pigs, who were generally recognized as being the cleverest of the animals. Preeminent among the pigs were two young boars named Snowball and Napoleon, whom Mr. Jones was breeding up for sale. Napoleon was a large, rather fierce-looking Berkshire boar, the only Berkshire on the farm, not much of a talker, but with a reputation for getting his own way. Snowball was a more vivacious pig than Napoleon, quicker in speech and more inventive, but was not considered to have the same depth of character. All the other male pigs on the farm were porkers. The best known among them was a small, fat pig named Squealer, with very round cheeks, twinkling eyes, nimble movements, and a shrill voice. He was a brilliant talker, and when he was arguing some difficult point, he had a way of skipping from side to side and whisking his tail, which was somehow very persuasive. The others said of Squealer that he could turn black into white. These three had elaborated old Major's teachings into a complete system of thought to which they gave the name of animalism. Several nights a week, after Mr. Jones was asleep, they held secret meetings in the barn and expounded the principles of animalism to the others. At the beginning, they met with much stupidity and apathy. Some of the animals talked of the duty of loyalty to Mr. Jones, whom they referred to as master, or made elementary remarks such as, "Mr. Jones feeds us. If he were gone, we would starve to death." Others asked questions as, "Why should we care what happens after we are dead?" Or, "If this rebellion is to happen anyway, what difference does it make whether we work for it or not?" And the pigs had great difficulty in making them see that this was contrary to the spirit of animalism. The stupidest questions of all were asked by Molly, the white mare. The very first question she asked Snowball was, "Will there still be sugar after the rebellion?" "No," said Snowball firmly. "We have no means of making sugar on this farm. Besides, you do not need sugar. You will have all the oats and hay you want." "And shall I still be allowed to wear ribbons in my mane?" asked Molly. "Comrade," said Snowball, "those ribbons you are so devoted to are the badge of slavery. Can you not understand that liberty is worth more than ribbons?" Molly agreed, but she did not sound very convinced. The pigs had an even harder struggle to counteract the lies put out by Moses, the tame raven. Moses, who was Mr. Jones' special pet, was a spy and a tale-bearer, but he was also a clever talker. He claimed to know of the existence of a mysterious country called Sugar Candy Mountain, to which all animals went when they died. It was situated somewhere up in the sky, a little distance beyond the clouds, Moses said. In Sugar Candy Mountain, it was Sunday 7 days a week. Clover was in season all the year round, and lump sugar and linseed cake grew on the hedges. The animals hated Moses because he told tales and did no work, but some of them believed in Sugar Candy Mountain, and the pigs had to argue very hard to persuade them that there was no such place. Their most faithful disciples were the two cart horses, Boxer and Clover. These two had great difficulty in thinking anything out for themselves, but having once accepted the pigs as their teachers, they absorbed everything that they were told and passed it on to the other animals by simple arguments. They were unfailing in their attendance at the secret meetings in the barn and led the singing of beasts of England, in which the meetings always ended. Now, as it turned out, the rebellion was achieved much earlier and more easily than anyone had expected. In past years, Mr. Jones, although a hard master, had been a capable farmer, but of late he had fallen on evil days. He had become much disheartened after losing money in a lawsuit and had taken to drinking more than was good for him, but for whole days at a time he would lounge in his Windsor chair in the kitchen, reading the newspapers, drinking, and occasionally feeding Moses on crusts of bread soaked in beer. His men were idle and dishonest. The fields were full of weeds. The buildings wanted roofing. The hedges were neglected, and the animals were underfed. June came, and the hay was almost ready for cutting. On Midsummer's Eve, which was a Saturday, Mr. Jones went into Willingdon and got so drunk at the Red Lion that he did not come back till midnight on Sunday. The men had milked the cows in the early morning and then had gone out rabbiting without bothering to feed the animals. When Mr. Jones got back, he immediately went to sleep on the drawing-room sofa with the news of the world over his face, so that when the evening came, the animals were still unfed. At last they could stand it no longer. One of the cows broke in the door of the store shed with her horn, and all the animals began to help themselves from the bins. It was just then that Mr. Jones woke up. The next moment, he and his four men were in the store shed with whips in their hands, lashing out in all directions. This was more than the hungry animals could bear, and with one accord, though nothing of the kind had been planned before, they flung themselves upon their tormentors. Jones and his men suddenly found themselves being butted and kicked from all sides. This situation was quite out of their control. They had never seen animals behave like this before, and this sudden uprising of creatures whom they were used to thrashing and maltreating just as they chose frightened them almost out of their wits. After only a moment or two, they gave up trying to defend themselves and took to their heels. A minute later, all five of them were in full flight down the cart track that led to the main road, with the animals pursuing them in triumph. Mrs. Jones looked out the bedroom window, saw what was happening, hurriedly flung a few possessions into a carpet bag, and slipped out of the farm by another way. Moses sprang off his perch and flapped after her, croaking loudly. Meanwhile, the animals had chased Jones and his men out onto the road and slammed the 5-bar gate behind them. And so, almost before they knew what was happening, the rebellion had been successfully carried through. Jones was expelled, and the manor farm was theirs. For the first few minutes, the animals could hardly believe in their good fortune. Their first act was to gallop in the body right around the boundaries of the farm, as though to make quite sure that no human being was hiding anywhere upon it. And then they raced back to the farm buildings to wipe out the last traces of Jones' hated reign. The harness room at the end of the stables was broken open. The bits, the nose rings, the dog chains, the cruel knives with which Mr. Jones had been used to castrate the pigs and lambs were all flung down the well. The reins, the halters, the blinkers, the degrading nose bags were thrown onto the rubbish fire which was burning in the yard. So were the whips. All of the animals capered with joy when they saw the whips going up in flames. Snowball also threw onto the fire the ribbons with which the horses' manes and tails had usually been decorated on the market days. "Ribbons," he said, "should be considered as all clothes which are the mark of a human being. All animals should go naked." When Boxer heard this, he fetched the small straw hat which he wore in summer to keep the flies out of his ears and flung it onto the fire with the rest. In a very little while, the animals had destroyed everything that reminded them of Mr. Jones. Napoleon then led them back to the store shed and served out a double ration of corn to everybody with 2 biscuits for each dog. And then they sang Beasts of England from end to end 7 times running, and after that they settled down for the night and slept as they had never slept before. But they woke at dawn as usual, and suddenly, remembering the glorious thing that had happened, they all raced out into the pasture together. A little way down the pasture, there was a knoll that commanded a view of most of the farm. The animals rushed to the top of it and gazed around them in the clear morning light. Yes, it was theirs. Everything they could see was theirs. In the ecstasy of that thought, they gambolled round and round. They hurled themselves into the air in great leaps of excitement, and they rolled in the dew. They cropped mouthfuls of sweet summer grass. They kicked up clods of the black earth and snuffed its rich scent. And then they made a tour of inspection of the whole farm and surveyed with speechless admiration the ploughland, the hayfield, the orchard, the pool, the spinney. It was as though they had never seen these things before, and now, even now, they could hardly believe that it was all their own. Then they filed back to the farm buildings and halted in silence outside of the farmhouse. That was theirs, too. But they were frightened to go inside. After a moment, however, Snowball and Napoleon butted the door open with their shoulders, and the animals entered in single file, walking with the utmost care for fear of disturbing anything. They tiptoed from room to room, afraid to speak above a whisper, and gazing with a kind of awe at the unbelievable luxury, at the beds with their feather mattresses, the looking glasses, the horsehair sofa, the Brussels carpet, the lithograph of Queen Victoria over the drawing-room mantelpiece. They were just coming down the stairs when Molly was discovered to be missing. Going back, the others found that she had remained behind in the best bedroom. She had taken a piece of blue ribbon from Mrs. Jones' dressing table and was holding it against her shoulder and admiring herself in the glass in a very foolish manner. The others reproached her sharply, and they went outside. Some hams hanging in the kitchen were taken out for burial, and the barrel of beer in the scullery was stove in with a kick from Boxer's hoof. Otherwise, nothing in the house was touched. A unanimous resolution was passed on the spot that the farmhouse should be preserved as a museum. All were agreed that no animal must ever live there. The animals had their breakfast, and then Snowball and Napoleon called them together again. "Comrades," said Snowball, "it is 6:30, and we have a long day before us. Today we begin the hay harvest, but there is another matter that must be attended to first." The pigs now revealed that during the past 3 months they had taught themselves to read and write from an old spelling book which had belonged to Mrs. Jones' children and which had been thrown on the rubbish heap. Napoleon sent for pots of black and white paint and led the way down to the 5-barred gate that gave on to the main road. Then Snowball, for it was Snowball who was best at writing, took a brush between the 2 knuckles of his trotter and painted out Manor Farm from the top bar of the gate, and in its place painted Animal Farm. This was to be the name of the farm from now onwards. After this, they went back to the farm buildings where Snowball and Napoleon sent for a ladder which they had caused to be set against the end wall of the big barn. They explained that by their studies of the past 3 months, the pigs had succeeded in reducing the principles of animalism to 7 commandments. These 7 commandments would now be inscribed on the wall, and they would form an unalterable law by which all the animals on Animal Farm must live forever after. With some difficulty, for it's not easy for a pig to balance himself on a ladder, Snowball climbed up and set to work with Squealer a few rungs below him holding the paint pot. The commandments were written on the tarred wall in great white letters that could be read 30 yards away. They ran thus, the 7 commandments. 1. Whatever goes upon 2 legs is an enemy. 2. Whatever goes upon 4 legs or has wings is a friend. 3. No animal shall wear clothes. 4. No animal shall sleep in a bed. 5. No animal shall drink alcohol. And 6. No animal shall kill any other animal. And finally, 7. All animals are equal. It was very neatly written, and except that friend was written F-R-E-I-N-D, and one of the S's was the wrong way round, the spelling was correct all the way through. Snowball read it aloud for the benefit of the others. All the animals nodded in complete agreement, and the cleverer ones at once began to learn the commandments by heart. "Now, comrades," cried Snowball, throwing down the paintbrush, "to the hayfield. Let us make it a point of honor to get in the harvest more quickly than Jones and his men could do." But at this moment, the 3 cows, who had seemed uneasy for some time past, set up a loud lowing. They had not been milked for 24 hours, and their udders were almost bursting. After a little thought, the pigs sent for buckets and milked the cows successfully, their trotters being well adapted to this task. Soon there were 5 buckets of frothing, creamy milk, at which many of the animals looked at with considerable interest. "What's going to happen to all that milk?" said someone. "Jones used to mix some of it in our mash," said the hens. "Never mind the milk, comrades," cried Napoleon, placing himself in front of the buckets. "That will be attended to. The harvest is far more important. Comrade Snowball will lead the way."
"I shall follow in a few minutes."
"Forward, comrades. The hay is waiting."
So the animals trooped down to the hayfield to begin the harvest, and when they came back in the evening, it was noticed that the milk had disappeared. How they toiled and sweated to get the hay in, but their efforts were rewarded, for the harvest was an even bigger success than they had hoped. Sometimes the work was hard. The implements had been designed for human beings and not for animals, and it was a great drawback that no animal was able to use any tool that involved standing on his hind legs. But the pigs were so clever that they could think a way around every difficulty. As for the horses, they knew every inch of the field and in fact understood the business of mowing and raking far better than Jones and his men had ever done. The pigs did not actually work, but directed and supervised the others, and with their superior knowledge it was natural that they should assume the leadership. Boxer and Clover would harness themselves to the cutter or the horse rake. No bits or reins were needed in these days, of course. and tramp steadily round and round the field, with a pig walking behind and calling up, "Gyap, comrade," or "Whoa, back, comrade," as the case might be. And every animal, down to the humblest, worked at turning the hay and gathering it. Even the ducks and hens toiled to and fro all day in the sun, carrying tiny wisps of hay in their beaks. And in the end, they finished the harvest in 2 days less time than it had actually taken Jones and his men. Moreover, it was the biggest harvest that the farm had ever seen. There was no wastage whatever. The hens and ducks, with their sharp eyes, had gathered up the very last stalk, and not an animal on the farm had stolen as much as a mouthful. All through that summer, the work of the farm went like clockwork. The animals were happy as they never conceived it possible to be. Every mouthful of food was an acute, positive pleasure, now that it was truly their own food, produced by themselves and for themselves, not doled out by a grudging master. With the worthless, parasitical human beings gone, there was more for everyone to eat. There was more leisure, too, inexperienced though the animals were. They met with many difficulties. For instance, later in the year when they harvested the corn, they had to tread it out in the ancient style and blow away the chaff with their breath, since the farm possessed no threshing machine. But the pigs, with their cleverness, and Boxer with his tremendous muscles, always pulled them through. Boxer was the admiration of everybody. He had been a hard worker even in Joan's time, but now he seemed more like three horses than one. There were days when the entire work of the farm seemed to rest on his mighty shoulders. From morning to night, he was pushing and pulling, always at the spot where the work was hardest. He made an arrangement with one of the cockerels to call him in the mornings half an hour earlier than anyone else, and would put in some volunteer labor at whatever seemed to be most needed before the regular day's work began. His answer to every problem, every setback, was, "I will work harder," which he adopted as his personal motto. But everyone worked according to his capacity. The hens and the ducks, for instance, saved 5 bushels of corn at the harvest by gathering up the stray grains. Nobody stole. Nobody grumbled over his rations. The quarreling and biting and jealousy which had been normal features of life in the old days had almost disappeared. Nobody shirked, or almost nobody. Molly, it was true, was not good at getting up in the mornings and had a way of leaving work early on the ground that there was a stone in her hoof. And the behavior of the cat was somewhat peculiar. It was soon noticed that when there was work to be done, the cat could never be found. She would vanish for hours on end and then reappear at mealtimes, or in the evening after work was over, as though nothing had happened. But she always made such excellent excuses and purred so affectionately that it was impossible not to believe in her good intentions. Old Benjamin the donkey seemed quite unchanged since the rebellion. He did his work in the same slow, obstinate way as he had done it in Jones's time, never shirking and never volunteering for extra work either. About the rebellion and its results, he would express no opinion. When asked whether he was not happier now that Jones was gone, he would only say, "Donkeys live a long time, and none of you has ever seen a dead donkey." and the others had to be content with this cryptic answer. On Sundays, there was no work. Breakfast was an hour later than usual, and after breakfast there was a ceremony which was observed every week without fail. First came the hoisting of the flag. Snowball had found in the harness room an old green tablecloth of Mrs. Jones's and had painted on it a hoof and a horn in white. This was run up the flagstaff in the farmhouse garden every Sunday morning. The flag was green, Snowball explained, to represent the green fields of England, while the hoof and the horn signified the future republic of the animals which would arise when the human race had finally been overthrown. After the hoisting of the flag, all the animals trooped into the big barn for a general assembly, which was known as the meeting, and hence the work of the coming week was planned out, and resolutions were put forward and debated, and it was always the pigs who put forward the resolutions. The other animals understood how to vote, but could never think of any resolutions of their own. Snowball and Napoleon were by far the most active in the debates. But it was noticed that these two were never in agreement. Whatever suggestion either of them made, the other could be counted on to oppose it. And even when it was resolved, a thing no one could object to in itself, to set aside the small paddock behind the orchard as a home of rest for animals who were past work, there was a stormy debate over the correct retiring age for each class of animal. The meeting always ended with the singing of Beasts of England, and the afternoon was given up to recreation. The pigs had set aside the harness room as a headquarters for themselves, and here, in the evenings, they studied blacksmithing, carpentering, and other necessary arts from books which they had brought out of the farmhouse. Snowball also busied himself with organizing the other animals into what he called animal committees. He was indefatigable at this. He formed the Egg Production Committee for the hens, the Clean Tails League for the cows, the Wild Comrades Re-Education Committee. The object of this was to tame the rats and rabbits, and the whiter wool movement for the sheep, and various others besides instituting classes in reading and writing. On the whole, these projects were a failure. The attempt to tame the wild creatures, for instance, broke down almost immediately. They continued to behave very much as before, and when treated with generosity, simply took advantage of it. The cat joined the re-education committee and was very active in it for some days. She was seen one day on a roof talking and talking to some sparrows who were just out of her reach. She was telling them that all animals were now comrades and that any sparrow who chose could come and perch on her paw, but the sparrows kept their distance. The reading and writing classes, however, were a great success. By autumn, almost every animal on the farm was literate in some degree. As for the pigs, they could already read and write perfectly. The dogs learned to read fairly well, but were not interested in reading anything except the Seven Commandments. Muriel the goat could read somewhat better than the dogs, and sometimes used to read to the others in the evenings from scraps of newspaper she found on the rubbish heap. Benjamin could read as well as any pig, but never exercised his faculty. So far as he knew, he said, there was nothing worth reading. Clover learnt the whole alphabet, but could not put words together. Boxer could not get beyond the letter D. He would trace out A, B, C, D in the dust with his great hoof, and then would stand staring at the letters with his ears back, sometimes shaking his forelock, trying with all his might to remember what came next and never succeeding. On several occasions, indeed, he did learn E, F, G, H, but by the time he knew them, it was always discovered that he had forgotten A, B, C, and D. Finally, he decided to be content with the first four letters and used to write them out once or twice every day to refresh his memory. Molly refused to learn any but the six letters which spelled her own name. She would form these very neatly out of pieces of twig and would then decorate them with a flower or two and walk around admiring them. None of the other animals on the farm could get farther than the letter A. It was also found that the stupider animals, such as the sheep, hens, and ducks, were unable to learn the seven commandments by heart. So after much thought, Snowball declared that the seven commandments could in effect be reduced to a single maxim, namely, four legs good, two legs bad. This, he said, contained the essential principle of animalism. Whoever thoroughly grasped it would be safe from human influences. The birds at first objected, since it seemed to them that they also had two legs. But Snowball proved to them that this was not so. A bird's wings, comrade, he said, is an organ of propulsion and not of manipulation. It should therefore be regarded as a leg. The distinguishing mark of man is the hand, the instrument with which he does all his mischief. The birds did not understand Snowball's long words, but they accepted his explanation, and all the humbler animals set to work to learn the new maxim by heart, four legs good, two legs bad. It was inscribed on the end wall of the barn above the seven commandments and in bigger letters. When they had once got it by heart, the sheep developed a great liking for this maxim, and often as they lay in the field, they would all start bleating. Four legs good, two legs bad, four legs good, two legs bad, and keep it up for hours on end, never growing tired of it. Napoleon took no interest in Snowball's committees. He said that the education of the young was more important than anything that could be done for those that were already growing up. And it happened that Jessie and Bluebell had both whelped soon after the hay harvest, giving birth between them to nine sturdy puppies. As soon as they were weaned, Napoleon took them away from their mothers, saying he himself would be responsible for their education. And he took them up into a loft which could only be reached by a ladder from the harness room, and there kept them in such seclusion that the rest of the farm soon forgot their existence. The mystery of where the milk went was to soon be cleared up. It mixed every day into the pig's mash. The early apples were now ripening, and the grass of the orchard was littered with the windfalls. The animals had assumed, as a matter of course, that these would be shared out equally. One day, however, the order went forth that all the windfalls were to be collected and brought to the harness room for the use of the pigs. And at this, some of the other animals murmured, but it was no use. All the pigs were in full agreement on this point, even Snowball and Napoleon. Squealer was sent to make the necessary explanations to the others. Comrade, he cried, you do not imagine, I hope, that we pigs are doing this in a spirit of selfishness and privilege? Many of us actually dislike milk and apples. I dislike them myself. Our sole object in taking these things is to preserve our health. milk and apples, this has been proved by science, comrades, contain substances absolutely necessary to the well-being of a pig. We pigs are brain workers, and the whole management and organization of this farm depends on us. Day and night, we are watching over your welfare. It is for your sake that we drink that milk and eat those apples. Do you know what would happen if we pigs failed in our duty? Jones would come back. Yes, Jones would come back. Surely, comrades, cried Squealer, almost pleadingly, skipping from side to side and whisking his tail. Surely there is no one among you who wants to see Jones come back? Now, if there is one thing that the animals were completely certain of, it was that they did not want Jones back. And when it was put to them in this light, they had no more to say. The importance of keeping the pigs in good health was all too obvious. So it was agreed without further argument that the milk and the windfall apples, and also the main crop of apples when they ripened, should be reserved for the pigs alone.